What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Born or Made podcast. Today, I have an incredibly inspirational guest. Her name is Kara Golden. She is the founder and CEO of Hint Beverages. I'm sure you know very, very well Hint. They are all over the place and delicious. She is also the author of Undaunted. Undaunted is her new book and a Wall Street Journal bestseller. She is also a podcaster. She has a podcast called The Kara Golden Show. I think you're reaching almost 200 episodes. She also has an awesome list of awards. There's so many of them. I just picked out a few that really sort of stood out to me. InStyle magazine awarded her badass. I think that that's probably one of the best awards anybody could ever get. San Francisco Times named her one of the most influential women, which I think is incredible. I think the most important and probably most difficult job that Kara does is being a mom of four. She's a mother of four. I'm a father of two, and that shit is no joke. Being a mom of four is no joke on top of all the other things. So I can't wait to dig into that. Kara, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'll give you a little rundown of what we do here. So the Born or Made podcast has been going on for about a year and a half, maybe a little longer. I think we're very close to our 100th episode. I had an idea one day to do a podcast. And I didn't want to just do another podcast where I'm interviewing awesome people, although that's great and cool. And a lot of the podcasts I listen to do that. But I wanted to have some sort of a theme for the podcast. And I've always wondered, specifically for entrepreneurs, because I'm an entrepreneur, you're an entrepreneur, but I've always wondered what entrepreneurial people slash professional athletes, high performers, I always wondered if they were born to do what they do or if they were made over time. And I think it's such an interesting question, the nature-nurture question. Is it a thing or is it not a thing? Maybe it's just not, and everybody's unique and individual and has their own story and path, which is true, but I do love the idea of the question. And the way I like to get there is through storytelling. I love listening to stories, and I really love telling stories. And I think human condition, human nature, just absolutely for you know, thousands of years have loved to sit around the fireplace to listen to great stories, and you absolutely have one. So the way we get to the answer to this question for you specifically is to hear your story. As way back as you're comfortable going, I want to hear all about Kara Golden from the day one.
So early days of Kara, my first real memory, this is going probably further back than you even wanted to, but when I was a toddler, I lived in Minneapolis, in Edina, Minnesota, and my dad called a family meeting at age three. You know, you've got kids that are slightly older than that. Like, we had never had a family meeting before. I'm the youngest of five kids, and I'm like, anybody know what a family meeting is? Like, I'm pretty excited, you know, that we're going to have this meeting. My dad announces that we're moving to Scottsdale, Arizona. He actually bought a house in Scottsdale and didn't tell my mom that we were moving. So it's like, back, wow. Right?
That is a bold move. Bold,
really, really bold move. So he said, I'm tired of shoveling snow. He had been with a company called Armor Food Company at the time. And he was like, there's an office in Scottsdale, Arizona. There's like 100,000 people there, and Phoenix and Scottsdale combined. I mean, it was pretty tiny. And so we got on the airplane and went to Scottsdale. And I always joke, still to this day, I have a lot of family still in Arizona, that we were early settlers. And in Arizona, no one was there. It was super interesting. If you're familiar with Arizona, like, I grew up on the front side of Camelback Mountain. And, you know, there's some old time families that were there. There was like the Boulders out in Carefree was there, and Camelback Inn, and that was kind of it. And we had to create our own fun, but I was an athlete. I was constantly running, and I did gymnastics, and I was always in some kind of sport, and same with the rest of my siblings. And
can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
So you were an athlete and you were always into sports. Was that something that your parents sort of proposed for you, or was that something that you just had a drive to do?
You know, it was kind of the one thing that my dad sort of required of all of us, that we always had to be doing some kind of sport. He didn't care what kind of sport. It was just, you always had to be doing some kind of sport. I look back on those times when, I mean, I sucked. I was so bad at softball, but I learned to laugh at myself. And I actually learned to really appreciate people who were better than me. Like, I wanted to be on the teams, even though I sort of sucked. I didn't want to be on the team with all people who sucked. I wanted to be on the team with all the good people in some like hope that I would actually get better. And I go back to, you know, thinking about that as ways to build a team, ways to build a company too, that you never want to be around people that are just as good as you. You want to hire people who are better than you, that people who are, who just know their stuff, because it's energizing to learn from these people. And it's sort of counter to, I think, what maybe many people think, but I think many entrepreneurs, when you think back on it, it's sort of how they, it's how they up their game, right? That they want to surround themselves with people. They want to have people that inspire them, that are, you know, ideal to them in some way, that they can mentor or have mentors, but also mirror in some way how they're doing things. So that's where I learned sort of that aspect. But it's funny, my husband actually grew up in New York in Scarsdale. And we talk about this a lot, because I think growing up in Arizona, the weather is so conducive to being outside. And we had this coach, Mr. Morris, that everybody was terrified of Mr. Morris, because we would show up for school and he'd say, like, okay, run a quarter. We're in first grade. We're running a quarter of a mile. And by the end of the year, we were running 2 to 3 miles. I mean, it was like in first grade. I mean, and everybody was doing it. Like, there was no way that you could get a pass to not be doing it. And depending on the way that Mr. Morris woke up, he would share with us, like, okay, today we're going to run, like, you know, be halfway during the year, we're going to run 3 miles. And we'd be like, 3 miles? We just ran 2 miles yesterday. He was like, it doesn't matter, run 3 miles. And it was this, like, we would laugh. I mean, we would just be like, no, Mr. Morris, don't do this to us. But what it trained us to do, I think, too, was also be able to react on the fly, right? And just go with it. And just like, stop complaining and figure it out along the way. And, you know, and ultimately all of us were really good athletes in our school. I mean, we were all going and doing sports and in pretty good shape, but I think it's growing up in a place that has that kind of, you know, weather and that sort of environment, but also having a coach like that, that is constantly pushing you a little bit harder than you ever thought was possible.
What was high school like?
High school was super interesting. When I was, I mean, one of the stories actually that I talk about in my book is my dad. So my dad started at Armour Food Company, and then they were acquired by a company called the ConAgra. And my dad was always coming up with all these ideas for little companies along the way. Even though he was working inside of a big company, he had started a brand called Healthy Choice. I, of course, did not appreciate what Healthy Choice ultimately came to be, but I always knew he was like super creative and was an entrepreneur in the making, and always kind of curious why he didn't go out on his own and kind of hang his own shingle, because instead, he really viewed it as a huge risk that he couldn't take. I appreciate it as a parent now, you know, knowing that my dad sort of decided not to really do what he wanted to do, ultimately, because he felt that he had to put food on the table and a roof over the head and 5 kids. And he wanted to make sure we all went to college and whatever his dreams were for us. But I think that the interesting thing for me when I was in high school was that my dad was laid off. And it was something that I saw that we never thought was possible. So my sister and my brother were both off at university. My brother and sister, oldest ones, were long gone. And so I'm at home with my parents, and my dad comes home and says he's laid off. And I was like, you know, how did you let that happen? I mean, I was horrible, right? Like I was like, how did this, you know, happen? And he's like, well, I didn't have an MBA. And so I'm waiting for the segment of CNN to come on in the 80s where they laid people off at any age for not having an MBA. MBAs were hugely important. And so here, this guy's like running the largest product inside of ConAgra, and he gets laid off for not having a badge, essentially. He was so loyal to this large company, and yet it didn't matter. And I saw that, you know, at age 16, that my world was rocked. His world was rocked, but it was a super interesting time. And anyway, fast forward, while he's out looking for a job in his, you know, late 50s at this point, not sort of the ideal time to be looking for a new job. It was the only job he had ever had. He ended up going back to some of his suppliers. And so his suppliers were basically food that went into, you know, these healthy choice meals. So shrimp fishermen off the coast of St. Simons Island, Georgia, were his buddies. And he used to go and shrimp fish with them. And so he kept asking them for contacts and see if they knew anybody who was hiring. And he'd check in with them every few months. And one of the guys who ran one of the boats said, do they know that we don't have MBAs? We don't even have college degrees. They're laughing about the fact that this big company is laying off my dad because they really like my dad a lot. So they refused to sell shrimp to ConAgra. They all like banded together because they like my dad so much. And my dad was like, don't do that. Like that's really bad. And they're like, oh, don't worry about it. There's other companies that will really want our shrimp. And so the importance of relationships for me, again, as a high schooler, I was like, that's kind of badass, like that they're doing that. I mean, I'm glad you're not telling them to do that. But a little part of me was like, I don't know, like, I don't want to know if you are telling them to do that either. Like, it's just, I think it's good for them that they're sticking up for you. So I guess it was about 9 months that they weren't selling to ConAgra. He got a phone call and they said, okay, we'll give you your job back. And there's a condition, you have to move to Omaha, Nebraska. He didn't want to move to Omaha. My mom didn't want to move to Omaha, but it was their only choice. And that was the only way that they were going to get their pension back in the day when companies gave pensions. And so he's like, okay, fine. I'll move to Omaha, Nebraska. We'll make the best of it. And so I was like, well, I'm going to be a senior. I'm not moving to Omaha, Nebraska. And he said, you know what? This is on me. You can stay. And I'm like, wait, what? I'm a senior. This is the summer before my senior year in high school. And he said, you're welcome to come with us. My kids always ask, did your parents like hate you and say like you were behind? I'm like, no. I mean, they felt terrible that he really felt like he should have seen it coming. And he wasn't going to put me through the process of moving to Omaha, Nebraska. I stayed in Scottsdale. And there's many people who went to high school with me who were quite happy that I was, you know, living in this
house. I'm sure. And party time.
It was great. I mean, it was a lot of fun, but I think that more than anything, I learned responsibility. And I think I had a great training wheels for this because my parents had given me a lot of rope and they basically said, as long as you don't screw it up, you can stay. And call us every day. I never miss those phone calls, you know, check in with them. It was all good. And we never let things get so out of control that I was going to have the plug pulled on me. But again, learning that early on, that responsibility, I think it's, you know, as a parent, even today, it's something that I think about a lot. It's like, you know, especially when people are asking for it, but also seeing whether or not they can kind of adhere to that next level and keep upping the level, which I think that's sort of a leadership and training in some ways.
One thing I want to just quickly backtrack on a little bit, because I think it's so important and you just sort of, you know, brushed over it, though I think it could arguably be the most important piece to business that people tend to overlook. Relationships. a lot of business people that I've been in business with and also have conducted business with care far too much about the bottom line and will sacrifice a long-standing relationship for a better potential financial opportunity. I can't emphasize enough how passionate I am about relationships and how much relationships mean to me. And it sounds like to you, through watching that experience with your dad, I mean, it's such a glaring example. Danny Meyer is a mentor of mine, and his business partner, Richard Corain, became a very close friend and mentor of mine as well. I've spent more time with Richard than with Danny on a mentorship sort of basis. And I'll never forget, you know, we used to have like a quarterly meeting at Maialino in the city. And one morning he said to me, you know, Mike, if there's anything that I want to make sure you sort of really embrace and grasp is this idea that every single time a guest walks into one of your restaurants, they are a relationship waiting to happen. And if you don't take the opportunity, somebody else will. And it just stuck with me because I have always been this relationship development person. I believe that, you know, I'm not a smart guy. That's the truth. And I'm like an intellectually smart guy. You know, I was not a great student, but I've excelled in business because I really do believe in people. And I believe that relationships are so, so important. And so can you talk about relationships for a little bit?
The interesting thing that you touched on, though, is that it's sort of about putting the first foot forward, though, too, what that conversation was that you just mentioned, that oftentimes people don't think about it, and especially when they're in sort of your space in some way. And so I think for me, always, I was always a social person and I wanted to say hi to people and, you know, all of that. But I think getting to know people a little bit more, getting to really understand, I guess you call it EQ to some extent today. I think that that's something that starts to build these relationships over time. And I think so many people just don't do that. But for me too, that I was always just so curious about people. And I mean, even, you know, my parents used to say whenever I would see a for sale sign on the block, I would, you know, watch and I go knock on the door. I'm like, oh, when are you moving? You know, because I'd want the new family. Like, I'd want to know the backstory. Oh, do you know who's moving in here? No, we don't know yet. We haven't sold the house. I'm like, okay, well, so when are you guys moving? And I'd sort of add up like when they're coming in, and then I'd be like the welcoming committee. I'd be like, do you have any kids? Like, we, you know, we play, you know, hide and seek. We, you know, we do all kinds of things, you know, around here. And I was always kind of, in many ways, Switzerland. I didn't try and figure out. I still to this day have friends in lots of different circles because I had lots of different interests. And I think it satisfied my curiosity, but it also allowed me to build relationships in lots of different communities, especially as an adolescent, when I didn't like one group that I was hanging out with for a while, I go hang out with the other group for a little while. I didn't just hang out with one certain group. And like I said, still to this day. And I think as a leader, I mean, it's even running my company and building my company from scratch, I'm still trying to learn. I'm still trying to figure out so many different aspects of our business. I wasn't afraid to go and bottle our product or put cases on the shelf, or even though I came from direct to consumer, even before I was learning this whole new industry, there were things in direct to consumer that I really hadn't focused on. And I went back and learned them, everything from, you know, basic engineering to, you know, how to build a subscription business and lifecycle business and retention and all of that kind of stuff. I was just curious and wanted to learn all of those things. And I think that when you put your first step forward and sort of show people that you have an interest in something, whether it's a customer or it's an employee or it's a friend, it's really not that tough because so many people don't do that. And I think that that's just something that I've seen in my journey.
All right, ladies and gents, I want to talk to you about my new business, Creatures of Habit. I don't take any advertising on this podcast. I have launched a new business that means everything to me. Podcast is very important. Creatures of Habit is as important. This is a business that is built around habits, healthy habits, incredibly delicious, convenient, healthy habits. I've launched with a product called The Protagonist. It is a gluten-free, plant-based, 30 grams of protein per serving instant oatmeal. It is an instant oatmeal with 30 grams of plant-based protein, 7,000 IUs of vitamin D3, 300 milligrams of omega-3 fatty acids, probiotic, digestive enzymes, pink Himalayan salt, chia seeds, flax seeds, pumpkin seeds. It's made four different ways. You can make it with just adding hot water. You can make it in a microwave. You can make it an overnight, you know, in the fridge. And you can make a smoothie out of it. The shit's the fucking bomb. It is literally the first thing that I put into my body every single day. And if you guys know me, you know that I care about everything that I put into my body. Literally everything I put into my body, I am conscious of. I'm a health nut, and I wanted to create a product that honestly helped change my life, which is oatmeal. Actually, the first thing I started eating when I went from the darkness to the light was oatmeal. That was the first meal I had every single day, and for the last 17 years, it has been the first thing that I put into my body on a daily basis, and that's why the business is called Motherfucking Creatures of Habit, because I am the ultimate creature of habit, and being a creature of habit has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. So, instant oatmeal, 30 grams of plant-based protein, vitamin D3, omega-3 fatty acids, pink Himalayan salt, probiotic, digestive enzymes. Like, it's so fucking good and it's delicious. Three awesome flavors: vanilla, chocolate, blueberry, banana. Do yourself a favor. Go over to Creatures of Habit. That's Creatures with a K, creaturesofhabit.com, and please support my new business. It will help change your life. Eating healthy things that make life easier is just the way to be. You call yourself an accidental entrepreneur. Because I want to get into the hint story. Will you unpack that a little bit for us?
I never really thought about becoming an entrepreneur. I worked for incredible entrepreneurs, starting with CNN, so Ted Turner, and then ended up moving to San Francisco, stumbled upon this little startup that had spun out of Apple. I didn't work for Steve Jobs, but I worked for people who worked for Steve Jobs that had sort of, you know, very much the ethos of kind of Steve Jobs' way. And then we were acquired by a company called America Online, so Steve Case. And so here I'm working for three very different, but three incredible entrepreneurs, in whether directly or indirectly. And a lot of people have said, oh, come on, you knew it. Like, those were training wheels for you becoming an entrepreneur. Not at all. I mean, the idea for Hint came about really when I was taking a few years off. You and I were talking before the podcast started about, you know, my commute to New York City over, you know, many, many years. Every week I would fly back, which was way too much airplane time. United Airlines pilots all knew my name. And after a while, I'm like, I've got two kids and I was pregnant with my third. And I thought, I want to be a parent. Like, I'm never going to be able to kind of go back in time and do over in some ways. And I wanted to take some time. People kept asking me, how much time are you going to take? I'm like, I don't know. And, you know, I'm not sure. And they'd say, you mean like 6 months, a year? Because we want to know, because we're interested in getting you to come on our team or whatever. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. I need to sort of figure it out. And it was during that time when I really didn't know when I was going to go back, if I was going to go back into tech or not. That's when I came up with this idea for Hint. And I really started focusing on my own health, and starting with how I felt, but also the idea that I had gotten way out of shape from just focusing all my hours and every single day on work. And I was as I mentioned earlier, had been a gymnast, and I knew I was a runner. And so I just started exercising again. And I was trying to get a bunch of weight off that I'd gained over the course of many pregnancies and couldn't get it off. I kept looking at different diets. I had never dieted over, you know, my whole life. I hadn't dieted, but nothing was working. And I had finally just about given up. And then I started looking at the ingredients on my diet soda, my Diet Coke in particular, and was just thinking, wow, I am so focused on what I put in my kids' bodies, what I put in my car, but I don't even think about what I put in my own body. That was almost 17 years ago. And it was just this epiphany. I mean, I still run into people to this day who say, I remember we're trying to talk to you about a job. And you're like, do you know how much stuff is in our food? Do you know that there's like, you know, organic versus, I mean, all of this stuff was just this like huge learning that was out there that most people were not thinking about. But for whatever reason, I was thinking about it. I was never a nutritionist or a cook, or I was an okay cook, but I mean, you know, this was never really my focus, but just taking that time to kind of figure out what I was interested in, all of a sudden I saw the holes in the market. And that's when I dropped my Diet Coke. Now I call it my Diet Coke addiction for plain water. And I realized that I should have been drinking a lot more plain water growing up in Arizona, but I never did because I thought plain water was boring. And that's why I started drinking diet soda. And I started slicing up fruit and throwing it in the water just to get me to drink this plain water while I was getting off of the diet soda. And after 2.5 weeks of doing this little test, that's when I lost over 20 pounds, 24 pounds in 2.5 weeks. It was insane. It was like, boom. And I couldn't really understand why this was happening. I actually thought I might be sick. The timing of it was just kind of serendipitous with really what was really going on with myself. And what I realized was that this reaction that I was having to diet sweeteners, and now, you know, they talk about it as insulin resistant. I was never diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, but I think I was close. I think I was like right on the cusp. And here I had always thought of myself as a very healthy person, that I was, you know, drinking Diet Coke. I was, you know, eating pretty good. I wasn't having 12 cupcakes a day, but I just could not fix myself. So when people came to me and they started talking to me about, you know, going and doing this tech job, it wasn't that I wasn't interested in it, but I was like, I just felt this passion and this interest and this learning and, you know, something that I was really, really fascinated with. And that was really the beginnings of Hint. And people would say to me, like, are you going to do anything with this water that you're making? I'd go to the gym and I'd have a pomegranate inside of my, you know, glass, my, you know, Sig bottle at the time. And people would joke around, like, is there raspberries or like, that's a pretty good idea. Like what, you know, we've got this product called vitamin water. And I'd say, oh, vitamin water has lots of sugar in it. They didn't even have a diet version of it at the time. I said, no, this is different. I just want water that tastes better. And so the more I saw potential customers in front of me without even knowing that they were potential customers really interested, and I was educating them about this product, I thought, maybe I'll just take it to Whole Foods and my local Whole Foods and see if I can get a product on the shelf. I didn't even at this point say, I'm going to launch a company. It was, I kept saying, I'm going to see if I can get it on the shelf because it'd just be fun. Like it would just entertain me to get a product on the shelf. I didn't even know there was like a national buying group in Austin. I mean, I was clueless. You talked about fears earlier. I think that oftentimes we put fears in front of ourselves. We label things as like starting a business, starting a company. That still to me, to this day, sounds scary. Instead, I've always been pretty good at figuring out what are the steps, hold that goal way out there of starting a company or whatever, and just do the steps instead, because it's way easier to sort of figure out how to get there. And I think that that was, you know, the early days of Hint.
I mean, it's such a, I love hearing the moment. They're typically unexpected moments. And now this amazing company that you're running. Are there any moments that you can share with us that you that stand out for you? You know, you've said leader a few times in the convo where you were like, wow, this is a real thing. And I am actually leading this company.
So here's one actually that I don't talk about in my book, because I had turned in my book manuscript right before COVID. So it's March 11th, 2020. I'm in New York City. We have an office in New York, and our main office has been in San Francisco, but we have an office in New York, and I've got to go out there for some meetings. But as I land in our office, it's just this feeling. I mean, if you remember that week in New York, I mean, it was pretty gnarly. I mean, they were closing down, talking about closing down the bridges and tunnels going into the city. And I just looked at our team and thought, you know, these guys are really stressed out. And I said, why is everybody in the office if they're so stressed out? And, you know, they were worried about going on the subway and whatever. And I called our HR group in San Francisco, and I said, it's really different here in New York right now than it is in San Francisco. And everybody should just be working from home. I mean, it's just, it's everybody, we're putting way too much emphasis on everybody coming into an office right now. Like, let's just let people like do what they need to do. And I think probably some of the first COVID cases, at least in New York, were sort of showing up on our block. I think the Gap had some of the first ones, and they were right across the street from our office. So everybody was a little bit freaked out. That's when I headed back on March 13th, back to San Francisco. And my son said, hey, you know, I know you're landing at like 9:30. Do you mind stopping at Target right by the SFO? Friday night, you know, good times. I was like, sure, whatever, I'll stop there. And I'm always checking stock on the shelves of Hint, of course. And I go and look for the Hint in the Target store. It's a big Target store. There's not a single bottle of Hint. And so I do what I've always done as a founder. I walk in the back room, you know, I get yelled at by the manager. I'm like, it's all good. I work here, you know, like I go through, you know, this whole process, and there's not a drop of Hint anywhere. And here it is, 10 o'clock at night. And on a Friday night, you know, I'd been hearing about hoarding. I'd been hearing about toilet paper, you know, can't find any of this, bleach, whatever. But never did I really think that Hint was one of those products, but it's water. And so part of me was like, oh, everybody wants Hint. But then I'm thinking, there's no Hint anywhere for people to buy. And why isn't it actually getting on the shelf? Because I knew that we had enough stock. But what I started realizing was that there was this problem between our warehouses and actually getting on the shelf at Target. And so I went up to the cash register and I said, can you see exactly what's showing up? Because the automatic replenishment should have been coming off of the cash register, and it showed zero. And I said, so why isn't it ordering? Why isn't it ordering product? This poor person, like at the cash register, is like, who are you, lady? It's like Friday night. I want to go home. So it was at that point that I knew we had a problem. And so I'm driving home. I call our head of sales and I said, we've got a big problem. I mean, this, if the EDI systems are broken and a store as big as a Target, I'm sure it's happening in some of the other locations, I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning and go check it out. So I went to San Francisco, same problem. I then went into Whole Foods, and it's a mess. I mean, it's just everywhere. And so I said, we've got a problem, and I'm not going to put this on you guys. Instead, I'm going to say, here's what we're going to do. We're going to call every single one of these buyers all over the US, and we're going to offer to send a truck in. We'll figure out the payment, whatever, later. I'm not worried about it, but we've got to quickly bypass this EDI system. And they're like, well, I don't know if we can do that. I'm like, try. Just try and do it. Just fix the problem. again, in order to fix the problem, sometimes you have to get in there a little bit manually and roll up your sleeves and figure out how to do it. So anyway, it was at that point where figuring out sort of the way, I didn't have a roadmap. Nobody else in the beverage industry was doing what we were doing. People are like, are you talking to other people? I'm like, no, they're like, I don't know. We don't know how to bypass it, whatever. And I was like, okay, well, this is what I'm doing. If you guys want to follow me, fine. If nobody wants to follow, that's okay too. We just kept going. And we actually gained significant shelf space during that time because we just went. Like, and this is a lesson of understanding that you can't stay complacent. It might have been the wrong move. We didn't have all the I's dotted and T's crossed, but the key thing was that I was not going to stand still. And I had to just keep moving along the way. As things started to get even hairier over the next couple of weeks, and San Francisco office finally, you know, followed suit, closed down. New York had totally shut down at this point. All of our team was hearing on the news that it was shelter in place orders. I was hearing from our plants, which are regulated by the FDA, that we had to be running 24 hours a day, that we were an essential product. I'm like, I know we're essential. When you go into pandemic status and you're running an essential product, you have to use best efforts. Your team has to be out there merchandising, showing that you're supporting, you know, all the workers in the stores. So while our team was thinking that they were supposed to be sheltering in place, I'm telling my team, I know that's what you heard on the news, but you're not actually sheltering in place because you're an essential product that is FDA regulated and we will lose our license. So here are your gloves and your masks and your hand sanitizers and let's go. And I felt at that point, after saying it over and over again and taking phone calls from employees and holding Zoom calls and all of that, I felt like, how can I actually sit inside my office and say this to my team without being out there with them? I mean, that to me, I thought just seemed just asinine. It was at that moment that I, you know, put on my Lululemon leggings with the Hint branding on it and my shirts. And I went out there and took on a route. And there were a lot of people who over the years, we have a lot of longtime employees, but we have some that haven't worked here for very long. And they were like, the CEO of the company is actually taking a route. Yeah, right. And they said, no, she probably is actually. She's in Marin County. She's figuring out exactly, you know, how to have the entire team work in less stores, closer to their homes. We didn't lay off one single person during this time because we said to our team, if you're willing to be reallocated into sales jobs, then you might have been going into offices yesterday, but now you're going to be going into Safeway or Costco or whatever it is. That we had two people who quit. They didn't want to have that role. But everybody else said, hey, I'm just happy that you guys are thinking about this and trying to make it work. We weren't changing titles. We weren't changing salaries. But again, a lot of people at the time, I didn't really know what I was doing. I just knew that I was leading with, I couldn't stay complacent. I had to do something. There was a possibility that it was wrong, but I was going to be out there just in case I needed to pull back the reins in some way and try and figure out better ways to do things that maybe people hadn't thought of. Maybe they had thought of it, but that was a lesson for me for sure in leading. And I think sort of working under leaders, particularly in tech, where you didn't have the roadmap and you just went out and tried and you kept trying to up the ante along the way and figure it out and sort of share with people, you know, when you don't know what you're doing, when you're a little scared, but you're willing to go out there and, you know, there's a humanness to it that is not necessarily apparent in all organizations and all types of people who claim to be leaders out there that I think is especially during a time like COVID where they want to hear, you know, from their leader. They want to see their leader going out there and doing something that scares them a little bit.
I have a few more things that I want to get before we go. And I know that we're over time. So are you okay
for another? I'm good.
Okay, cool. You know, habits are a huge part of my life. And for years, I think we spoke about earlier, they really, you know, I say habits will make or break us, and they broke me for a long time. And now they certainly make me. I would love to hear about any habits that you do on a consistent basis that have kind of helped to shape the life you live today.
So exercise is key for me. And it's and I've sort of turned it over the years to being in nature. I think nature is, I haven't quite defined exactly what it is, but for me, it's waking up and having like a new environment every day. It could be the same trails, but sort of making sure that I'm kind of not just living a day like Groundhog Day, and instead just recognizing new trees, new birds, whatever it is in the world. And I think that that's something that, you know, just feeds my soul. And I think, unfortunately, living in urban cities, I found it hard to sort of, I missed that a lot, but maybe it's growing up in Arizona and sort of having such great scenery. But for me, the outdoors and sort of, you know, living and breathing that and making that a part of every single day of my existence is really, really key.
You wrote a book. It's called Undaunted. I really just want to ask you what inspired it, what we can expect from it, and how we can get it.
It was my journal. And it was about 6 years ago. I guess that is a habit of mine too. I was traveling all over the US and speaking about building Hint and staying in too many Holiday Inn Expresses, and you know, with the didn't know what room, I'd have to take a picture of the number on the hotel room after a while because they all look the same. And so I started journaling and started thinking and about answers to questions, typically questions that came at the end of these talks that people would ask me. I'd take one or two, and those were my prompts. And then I'd start just writing them out every night. Like, how would I answer it differently? And then after 4 years, I just started counting. I stupidly didn't put page numbers down on the bottom. And I was like, God, this thing is like really thick. It was 600 pages. And so I said to a friend of mine who's an author, I was like, you know, I think there's a lot of people that don't go to the conferences that I go to, or, you know, don't work for the companies that have hired me to come inside and speak. So how would I bind my notes and get them out to people? And she said, you mean publish a book? And I said, no, I'm a CEO. When do I have time to write a book? I can't write a book. And she's like, wait, you have 600 pages? Send it to me. Let me look at it. And she said, you at least have one book. You probably have two books in there. And I said, really? And people have said, did you always want to write a book? I was a journalism major in college. And they're like, did you always know you were going to write a book? I started my career at Time Magazine. I'm like, no, I didn't, like, not at all. I mean, I think for me, it was just, I really enjoyed kind of thinking. And I guess just writing to some extent too, it helped me just think about how to be better. And so the book in many ways was kind of an extension of that journal. The hardest part was editing it down to a digestible book size. So it's like 200 pages. It's a super quick read. The most interesting thing for me that I didn't really think about until it started selling out there was that I knew it would be great for entrepreneurs. I knew it'd be great for food and beverage entrepreneurs, but the number of people who have reached out to me, who have been sitting in the C-suite, who weren't entrepreneurs, who had never been an entrepreneur. And maybe this is coupled with, you know, COVID as well, but they're like, you talk a lot about risk and about how we don't actually take the risks that we're supposed to be taking in life. And without risk, it's difficult to grow. And that's what I got out of your book. Like, I'm wondering why I won't take risks. Do I feel like I would look stupid? Do I feel like, you know, I don't need to because I'm a CEO of a company? And I mean, it's crazy, the conversations from people that I didn't know, major public companies writing to me, reaching out to me saying, your book ignited something for me that I didn't know I was missing in my life. And I don't know what that means yet, but this conversation has come up again and again and again. So if I can actually, whether it's, you know, being Mr. Morris or coaching people to just kind of live their life to their fullest, I'm in. I didn't write the book for that reason, though. I wrote the book just because I felt sorry for people not being in the audience who might have wanted to ask me a question about, you know, starting a company. But the bigger change, I mean, that to me is something that is really, truly, like, that hits me in the heart, like, to know that I could affect people so profoundly in that way, because that was not my intention in writing a book.
This was such an awesome conversation. You know, I feel like the sun has changed its direction since we've been talking, and I've been so engaged in this combo. But this was such an incredible conversation. I can't thank you enough for taking the time with me here. The value is incredible, and I know that the listeners are going to absolutely love this one. Got to ask you one last question, which I ask everybody at the end of an episode. Do you, Kara Golden, think that you were born to do what you do today, or were you made over time?
My journey was made for me to do what I'm doing today. I fully believe that every single day, and I can't say that it's always written, but I think there's always choices. There's always forks in the road along the way, and everybody's got their map that is out there, and you've got to just be aware of how, and I think be thankful that you do have choices along the way, and it's your role in life, whether you're born or not born, to be this way, to appreciate that map along the way that will make you what you are today.
Woo! Kara Golden, legend. She was incredibly vulnerable with us, open, so insightful. The value that we got from hearing her story, and it was so interesting for me that she told her story in a pretty detailed way, and she was able to draw parallels from experiences that she had as a kid to current day sort of examples of things that she does, which I thought was so cool. She is such a powerful example of an entrepreneur who has a heart and a soul and a belief and in doing great things. So, man, I was so engaged in that conversation. She's just a great speaker, and she has a lot of value to offer. I hope you guys enjoyed that story and enjoyed hearing Kara. I know I certainly did. If you want to pass this podcast off to a friend or a family member, I think that would be awesome. I do this because I genuinely love doing it. It is not something that I have to do in any way, shape, or form. I truly love connecting with these totally inspiring people that really just brighten my day. And hopefully with me sharing this podcast with you and your friends and family, it could also brighten theirs. So it would mean the world to me if you hopped on to anywhere you listen to your podcast, give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. Reviews are everything. I really need reviews for the podcast. So if you could please write a review for us, it would mean the absolute world. And then the last thing I'm going to ask you to do is go support my new business, Creatures of Habit. Creatures of Habit is a business that I just launched. It is an incredible brand that is an extension of everything I owe my life to today, all of my habits and the things that keep me motivated on a daily basis, I'm going to put into this new business, Creatures of Habit. We've launched with a really cool product called The Protagonist. It has been my daily first meal of the day for many years. It's an instant oatmeal with plant-based protein, vitamin D3, omega-3 fatty acids, pink Himalayan salt, probiotic digestive enzymes. It's made four easy ways. It's absolutely friggin' delicious. It would mean the world if you would check out Creatures of Habit on the website, Creatures of Habit with a K. You can also follow us on Instagram, which would be cool to see what we're up to and see what the brand's all about. Anyway, you guys are the best. I fucking love you. I'm sitting here in my New York City apartment with the sun hitting me in the face. I'm feeling totally grateful, totally stoked on life. Today's one of those days after listening and having that conversation with Kara, I just feel fucking awesome. God, I feel awesome. And I just felt the need to share that with you guys, because when you feel awesome, you should fucking share it, especially in times like this. So I love you. I appreciate you. Until the next one, peace.